Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Men with the Golden Tongues. My name is Micah. I will be your host, joined by your other host, Brad.
Hello. We're here to talk about the most misnomer titled movie in the James Bond pantheon.
We are we're going to give our a spoiler review of No Time to Die, the 25th film in the James Bond franchise. Now, this is going to be a little different than our normal reviews. We're not going to do a plot point by plot point breakdown of everything in the film. We're not going to get hyper detailed. We'll save that for when the movie is widely available for consumption, you know, in your homes and whatnot. But we are going to give a spoiler review of our thoughts on the film. And yeah, man, this is Daniel Craig's last. And I you know, Daniel Craig has, you know, kind of infamously said on a couple of occasions that, you know, I'm really tired of playing James Bond. And if you're wondering, you know, well, what could possibly get Daniel Craig, this guy who's kind of tired of being James Bond, to come back and be James Bond one more time? And it's if, spoiler, James Bond dies.
Yeah, and has a kid.
The movie. Yeah, man.
like those are, it's hard to walk away from the movie without talking about two things that they had never, you know, in 25 previous or 24 previous films had never saw fit to do. And that is to give James Bond a child and to actually murder for real James Bond. Cause we've had like lots of like, you know, James Bond died in the press stories in previous films, but it was just a facade so that he could investigate freely in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing about movies and storytelling and stuff, if you don't see a body, that person is not dead. Well, we saw James Bond's body at the end of this thing, and we saw it get incinerated, just completely obliterated.
There was still a small part of me that, like, after they, like, did the toast and everything, like, what if we just, like, cut back to Jamaica, and there's, like, James Bond, like, chilling in his bungalow, somehow avoids a missile strike.
He just respawned, and it was
like, what happened? I was thrown out to sea and just swam to shore. I'm off the grid though, much like I did in Skyfall, but I'm gonna stay off the grid this time until I watch a Wolf Blitzer report that caused me to come back
to bring me back in. Oh man, so look, but you know, that's the ending. Let's start at the beginning a bit, and this takes place directly after Spectre. And we, you know, I believe you said this in your initial review, that this is like two different movies.
Yeah.
There's a first part, which culminates in Cuba. And then there's a second part, which feels like it is the continuation of, you know, the traditional Craig era film. I said in my review on the Apocalypse that I think everyone is going to love that first part. And I think only people who are fans of this Daniel Craig run will enjoy the second part. The first part of the film is, it feels a little more like classic James Bond.
Yeah. By the way, I was thinking about you during this entire cold open sequence, because it's so very long. Like it's so ridiculously long that like I need to see the timing, because I think we might have exceeded the record, which I think is still The World Is Not Enough. Mm-hmm. It's still to this day the longest of the cold open sequences. I think we might have exceeded that though. Like not to steal your thunder on this, but I feel like you could have like done the cold open, just be the flashback sequence with Madeline Swan, and then rolled credits, and then literally picked up right there, like when she's in the, you know, coming out of the water, and you know, then they drive to Italy, and all the rest of it happens.
Yeah.
It did feel incredibly long, because like that cold open sequence had multiple new scenes within it.
Yeah. Essentially. Yeah, man, that cold open, I mean, I understand it. And, you know, I had just rewatched Spectre. And I remember that conversation that they had in Spectre, and I'm like, oh wow, this is cool. Like they're showing it. And it just, it's a test. It's one of the knocks that I have on the movie, that I have on most movies. This movie's incredibly long. Like you said, this movie's almost 3 hours long. And, I, you know, there's a lot that you can kind of snip, nip and tuck, to get this movie, maybe not down to 2 hours, but you can get it to like 220. I feel like 220 is a really good length for a meaty James Bond film. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to do a lot with this now. The performances, look, everyone knows their characters, and individual performances are great. Daniel Craig is, you know, for my money, I think Daniel Craig is the James Bond that most resembles a human being. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, just the,
I think he came to resemble a human being. I don't know if he resembled a human being in the first two films. I think he eventually became a human being in the other ones.
Yeah. I'll give you that. He was very much a blunt object, a blunt instrument in those first couple of films. But I like his James Bond because it, you know, James Bond is essentially a government paid assassin, and it is, you can't just keep killing people without it affecting your psyche at some point, without it. And with his James Bond, they were trying to, you know, kind of get you to feel the weight of that responsibility of, mm-hmm. of being a hitman for the government. And I do enjoy his performance. His performance feels kind of bipolar due to the nature of the film being a little bipolar. You know, he's smiling in the first half of the movie.
He is. And like I said, I feel like that the humor was more dialed in within this movie than it had been in any of the previous films with him. Cause like all, like the one, the most lighthearted that I've ever seen the Craig James Bond is when they show up at Q's flat when he's making dinner for a date that he has. And yeah. like, you know, he opens the door and he's like, oh, Bond, he's like, you're alive. He's like, Q, I missed you. And he just like, comes in, just like very, very like lighthearted. He's like pouring wine for him and Moneypenny and just like taking the piss out of Q a little bit. Like that to me was like, that is a, you know, like Connery, like Brosnan, maybe even like a Moore-esque like moment that you would have that I don't really remember seeing from him. Like, I don't think we ever truly saw that moment from like Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. No, Timothy Dalton is just like all angst all the time, man.
Yeah.
what do you think of his performance overall? And what is your thought of the kind of the structure of the film, you know, how one half feels versus the other half?
So it's I think of it a little more of a nuanced take, because if you think about it, in the first half of the film, right, like James Bond has been essentially retired for 5 years, just kind of hanging out and doing his thing in Jamaica. So like when he's like fucking lighting it up around Cuba and doing all this stuff with, you know, with Ana de Almas's character, he's having fun, right? Like he's back in the game. Like he doesn't have the weight of government obligations. Like he's doing a favor for a friend in that first part of the film. It's only when, you know, he basically, you know, he gets led into a trap essentially where he starts to get a little bit more. And that's the other thing too. Like one of the things that I really enjoyed about this film is the paranoia that came from Daniel Craig's James Bond. Like it really is deep seated, like the association with Spectre and like how Blofeld kind of played on that, paranoia to, you know, drive a wedge between him and Madeline in the first part of the movie. And how like animated he got with the scientists when they were on the boat after escaping from the Spectre party and things of that nature as well. It very much reminds me. And I said this before, that I remember we predicted that like Spectre was going to be this version's On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And it actually ended up being this film,
yeah.
In some very overt ways, obviously yeah. Like, straight from the get go. But you have that kind of, like James Bond also had that paranoia in that film as well, where he was like singularly obsessed with Spectre to the point where he literally resigned from MI6 because M wouldn't let him, you know, pursue Spectre anymore, essentially. So like you get that same kind of deal in this one where like once Spectre enters the picture, he is just obsessed with them because it's like, you know, not to, you know, be punny or anything, but like it's like this like tentacle that won't let him go, essentially. So I thought from that aspect of the like seeing the multifaceted nature of James Bond, I think it was a success, and you really got to see that the most in the first half of the film, because essentially I think that the first movie ends once Blofeld is killed and then he has to confront like this new threat, and that's where it ties into his relationship with Madeline from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Let's talk about Léa Seydoux. I was reading opinions and stuff on it, and some people don't kind of buy the relationship between Léa Seydoux and Daniel Craig. I bought it. I didn't think it was bad. I think people's issue is that they're comparing the chemistry that Daniel Craig had with Ava Green as opposed to Daniel Craig and Léa Seydoux.
Yeah.
I understand that comparison, but I wouldn't make that comparison. Mm-hmm. Especially given that, you know, this James Bond is quite literally, you know, years older. He's much more seasoned. He's grown. Mm-hmm. And you know, Vesper Lynd is kind of like your first girlfriend who you swear up and down that you love, right? Mm-hmm. But like turns out, oh, she didn't really, you know, she wasn't the one. But you never forget that, right? But at the same time, like Léa Seydoux, I don't know, Léa Seydoux, her, Madeline Swann, I buy that relationship.
Yeah. I think she actually carried the film as a whole just from her acting. Like she was definitely the best actor in the film. Just in terms of the performance that she turned in, like her expressions and her like fear in the first part where they were being attacked by Spectre and Bond distrusted her essentially was very palpable. Something I caught the second time around when he puts her on the train, and sends her away, she actually like puts her hand over her stomach essentially. Cause I think like, mm-hmm. obviously like she knows, you know, she's like, hey, I have something to tell you earlier before he goes to do the Vesper thing. That it's alluding to that. Like, I don't think she was about to tell him about Rami Malek's character.
Right. No, she's like, hey, yeah. By the way, I got something in my wound here. That's yours.
And I didn't catch that the first time around, but I did catch it the second time around. And that was a very, like I said, I'm sure she was directed to do that, but it's a very subtle thing, but a very smart thing that rewards you on repeat views. And then, like I said,
my wife didn't catch it. I was like, oh, she's pregnant. Like immediately. Yep.
And then she's definitely the most complex character just from an acting performance standpoint in the entire film. I think she falls off a little bit at the end because she just didn't have a lot to do once they got to the, you know, the secret garden. But I think in the interim leading up to that, she is really carrying the performance of the movie. And I think she did an excellent job. And she, I feel like the relationship was much more believable in this film than it was in Spectre.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one of those movies that makes its predecessor better. I think, you know, I understand people have their gripes with Spectre. I don't necessarily know why people hate it. Because I don't know if it's because they came off of Skyfall and Skyfall was very fun, but Skyfall's plot was nonsensical. Spectre's plot was made a little more sense. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't as like ridiculous as Skyfall, which I love Skyfall, right? It's fun, but
People dislike Spectre because it essentially like reverse engineered the first three movies.
It's trying to retcon everything because like shared universes are all the rage, right?
Right. So but like, I think this film does a much better job of making that film make more sense within the context of the film series, essentially, mm-hmm. as things go along, because it shows that, you know, the organization wasn't singularly focused on, you know, torturing James Bond as it felt like, you know, like when you watch Spectre, like obviously you can see that Spectre, you know, killed many people and, you know, caused a lot of people to want to go out and seek revenge and do things of that nature. So I think that certainly helped. Blofeld still being able to kind of pull the reins, even from inside of a prison cell, just kind of shows the vast reach that Spectre has. Now, of course, they get, you know, the whole organization essentially gets wiped out in in about 10 seconds. thanks to Rami Malek's character's plot that he had instigated. But I think it made Spectre a more believable organization, even if their, you know, origins were a little skeptical, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned earlier, you mentioned that Lea Seydoux's character kind of didn't have much to do towards the end of the film. Rami Malek is in this movie, and I felt like an actor of his caliber is kind of wasted. I think Rami Malek is a really good actor. I don't think he's phenomenal, right? But I think he plays a creep very well. Mm-hmm. But this role, I was very excited for this role, and this role is just boils down to another lunatic who feels like he is the mirror image of James Bond, mm-hmm. and I feel like anybody could have done this role, mm-hmm. I think that they got by getting an actor at Rami Malek's like level, mm-hmm. I felt like it kind of lessened the film or lessened the character because he didn't really have much to do. Does that make any sense?
No, I get it. And I think that, so like, obviously they were not so covertly like alluding to the fact that he's like a Dr. No-esque character. Like he's not Dr. No, but there was enough winks and nods to Dr. No that it was pretty overt that's what they were going for. And if you recall, in Dr. No, you don't actually see Dr. No on the screen until essentially the second half of the movie, but he is present in the movie in other ways because you have him, you know, as like the faceless, you know, voice behind this plot that's going on. And you also most importantly have the scene that most people remember where, you know, Professor Dent is in that empty room with the spider and you just basically hear like the voice of God, you know, coming down from Dr. No in that room. And he sounds very scary. And the way it's filmed is chilling. I think that this scene could have benefited from a scene like that in the lead up where you either have the scientist or maybe Logan Ash in that sort of a predicament where Dr. No is essentially giving them instruction. You kind of got the Dr. No voice later when Bond the other 007 were in the lab where, and he came in like over the loudspeaker and stuff like that. So I get the reference there, but I think that you could have done more to show how intimidating that character is, very similar to how they did with Silva in Skyfall before you actually saw Silva appear on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because you didn't see Silva for literally half of the movie.
Yeah. But they dropped him in, or they showed other characters being fearful of him, or, you know, the messages that he sent to M online, essentially, that basically showed how formidable that character was. Rami Malek's character just kind of appears on screen once he does, like in Madeline's office, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last major cast member is Lashana Lynch as Nomi, the new 007. You know, I like the idea. I really do.
Yeah.
But I felt like she wasn't, and I think her performances were fine. I felt like, you know, if anybody was worried that, oh, they're going to make James Bond a girl, oh, they're going to give it to her, like, no, this is very much James Bond's movie. I felt like she really didn't have much to do.
Well, it's funny. So she embodied two Bond tropes from many previous Bond movies. And the two Bond tropes she embodied are the rival agent. Now, normally it's a foreign agent in the case of the James Bond films, but in this case, it just had to be a rival 00 agent that was trying to just one up him, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then later, she also, simultaneously embodies the other 00 agent that does everything by the book, where James Bond is like the wild card renegade. Like when she asks permission to kill Logan Ash with M, like M even makes a reference to, he's like, oh, he's like, thank you for asking. He's like, your predecessor wasn't so deferential. And she literally says, like, by the book. And like, we've seen it before where, like, you know, when Bond goes off script, M's like, don't make me get 008 in here to clear the dust, because he actually listens that 008. So like, so it was just funny to watch that, like, that both those tropes kind of be brought back as we go.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know what I wanted. I think I wanted more of the rival spy thing to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, more of a spy versus spy, tit for tat type of thing.
Yeah,
because we've seen
the reluctant partnership before in so many Bond films. Like he's had the reluctant, you know, opposite agent partner that he goes into the final mission with a lot. In these films. So that wasn't treading any new ground, essentially.
Right. But I like the idea of the character. I really like the entire cast of this new era. And I think it kind of sucks that we're not going to see them.
We don't know
that. We don't know.
We might retain some of the extended cast as we have in the past, even though that might be a little weird transitioning to what is essentially going to be a new James Bond story arc to have holdovers from this cast.
Right. Because nothing pisses me off more than the people who swear up and down that James Bond is a code name given to different people who, like, that's how they try to justify. And that everything that happened from the 60s to now is in one timeline, and just like they just got a new dude to change his name to James Bond, right? Like, it just I don't know, it pisses me off. So that's why I want to see everything just be brand new in the next phase. What else about the movie? What did you not really care for in the film?
That's a good question. I'm trying, like, there wasn't anything that was truly offensive in the movie to me. Like, there wasn't anything that I had dislike for, because a lot of the callbacks, the score, by the way, the Hans Zimmer score, which we didn't really know, like, there was definitely some Hans Zimmering in the score, like, that I noticed at points. But I think the callbacks caught me completely off guard. Like, I wasn't, you know, imagining, like, I figured they'd have allusions to On Her Majesty's. I didn't figure they'd pull We Have All the Time in the World twice and have that line spoken twice in the world or twice in the movie. And as if to throw on top of that, they also had the On Her Majesty's Secret Service theme play over when M and Bond were meeting in the square, basically.
Yeah,
which was also I also really enjoyed that interaction.
I had a huge smile on my face. I was just like, and my wife's like, "What is your problem?" I was just like, "Never mind." I love that song, man.
It's an amazing song. So and like I said, you had the callbacks to Casino Royale in the score when he went to go meet with Vesper. But yeah, as far as stuff I didn't like, it's kind of hard. Like I feel like there might have been one too many like extended action sequences. I think which is weird to talk about cutting in a Bond film, but like I think when you're talking about like getting the runtime down a little bit, that is maybe an area. Like I think of the sequence after they left Madeline's house and we're like going through the forest in Scandinavia as Logan Ash was, you know, running them down with his fleet of Range Rovers and motorcycles and stuff like that, as parts that you could, even though one of the cooler aspects of the movie happened in that part, I did get a lot of like, all right, here's this long chase. And then now Bond's in the forest and we're going to get kind of a repeat of this like Home Alone, like, you know, like MacGyvering his way through the situation like he did in Skyfall, kind of thing. So I feel like you could have trimmed some fat there. But for the most part, like there wasn't anything that I would have like overtly gotten rid of in this film, I don't think. Because everything I think flowed pretty well together. I would have liked, I guess the only thing I didn't like was how short attention was paid to Safin, essentially. Like, I think you could have made him a more formidable villain. Instead, he was almost like an afterthought. Like he was a secondary element to the main plot, which is Bond trying to save his family, essentially.
Yeah, he was essentially just another obstacle. And I get it. You know, I'm a guy who loves villains. But you know, if this is more of a personal story for Bond, and essentially the villain is no one person, right? Like it's everything coming at, you know, whatever is coming after you and your family, that is the villain. I get that. Aside from the runtime, like you said, I think everything kind of flowed. I think the plot made sense. It's ridiculous, right? Nanobots and shit, right? But like if you're complaining about that,
yeah, like, say you don't think that you think making a genetically targeted virus is
right?
Science fiction.
So you know, if you're complaining about like the plot, like okay, I mean, all right, but like go watch another Iron Man movie if you're complaining about this nanobot shit. So I think the plot made sense. I think it flowed. I enjoyed the performances, even if there were small, you know, performances. I did enjoy Safin. Look, as little as I think Lashana Lynch was used, and I think she could have been used a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But at the end when that scientist is like, I could cure your whole race with a keystroke or some shit, and she was just like, nope, time to die. I mean, the blackness in me was just like, oh, I mean, that's it. That's all I need. That's all I need from it. It was cool seeing Christoph Waltz as Blofeld. I like his Blofeld. I think I like his Blofeld because his Blofeld is like, it's not like, you know, his Blofeld is a little light, right? Like his Blofeld is like the Joker, but not like manic, right? Like he's very calm and, but not like calm in a brooding way.
Like he's the guy that's smiling while he's, you know, shoving a knife in your stomach, essentially.
Yeah. I like that, man. I like that a lot. I think, Ralph Fiennes.
I enjoyed Ralph Fiennes more in this film than the other films in the series. I really enjoyed seeing like the Bond M, we haven't seen this this level of Bond and M antagonism.
In
a ton of, like, especially the scene where Bond like is coming back to MI6 with like the visitor's pass, and he's at his desk and just fucking taking the piss out of him. Essentially, he's like, did this desk get smaller? He's like, and how M like he like M lets him get under his skin immediately. You know, yeah. working for the CIA and this side of the other thing, and you know, and just it, like the whole antagonistic relationship, and again the subtle things that the M character always does, where he's like, you know, as Bond's leaving, he tells Moneypenny to send in 007, and Bond like just has that small pause, essentially, and things of that nature. Like, I really enjoyed that that back and forth between them.
Yeah, man, I really dug it, man. It reminded me, you know, because past M's were either, you know, they were slightly antagonistic, or they were like, I don't think you should be doing this, but you're our best guy, so do whatever you want, right? Well,
it's like when the last time I remember this is when the is in Goldeneye, when Judi Dench first shows up as a new M, and like her and Bond have a very difference of philosophy, essentially. Yeah. Like Bond calls her a bean counter, and she calls him a dinosaur, essentially, a misogynistic dinosaur. And on and on we go. But then, like, after that film, like, her M was, like, fully in the corner of James Bond, like, yeah, doing his thing, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I that's one of the things where I'm like, man, I really, like, I wish we could have had more of them, right? Like, mm-hmm. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Judi Dench's M, and I think she got a wonderful send-off in Skyfall, but yeah, man, Ralph Fiennes was awesome as M in this movie. What else about the film?
Ana de Armas, even though she wasn't around for long, definitely left a fantastic impression. Like I'm also happy that she didn't die. Like I was fully anticipating that if she was going to be in the film for like 5 seconds, that he was going to somehow sleep with her and then she was going to get killed. So she was a sacrificial lamb. There wasn't really a sacrificial lamb in this.
Yeah.
Movie. Well, I guess Felix was the sacrificial lamb. I guess we should talk about Jeffrey Wright, because this is definitely the best Felix Leiter Bond like relationship movie, I think, in the series. I can't remember a time where I really enjoyed seeing Bond and Felix's relationship more than I did in this one.
Yeah, they do feel like brothers in arms.
Yeah.
in this series. And honestly, I was not expecting Felix to die. Like you said, I was expecting, you know, the traditional, you know, there are traditionally two Bond girls, one that is the pump 'em and dump 'em Bond girl. one is the Jill Masterson and one is the Pussy Galore, right? And Lashana Lynch was obviously going to be the one that kind of made it. But yeah, I'm really satisfied with Ana de Armas's character. I liked her character because, like, it was very sweet. Like, oh, this is my first mission, and oh, I'm super excited. But she's highly competent at her job.
Yes,
like, you know, it's
the point where she's like, I've been training for 3 weeks, and then like after she basically mows down an entire fucking troop of Spectre goons, he's like, three weeks? She's like, yeah, more or less. That's very good. And like I said, that whole Cuba sequence was just a tremendous amount of fun. Yeah. I also enjoyed the, at first view, I was like, was that Idris Elba that they just kind of panned by like super fast? And then the second view, I'm like, man, it looks like him. But because no one's talking about it, I assume that they just found an actor that looks like Idris Elba just to be cheeky in the film, which made me laugh. But like I said, that whole sequence over top, like you had the room like where Bond was in the center of the room. He looks up, there's the fucking Spectre like logo on the ceiling where the gas is coming down, and you know, like the whole, you know, fighting in the streets in Cuba and Paloma backing the car into the scaffolding to knock the doctor essentially away from Nomi. And it, like all, just all that stuff was a tremendous amount of fun.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I really enjoyed this movie. You know, I enjoyed Daniel Craig's run. It's, I mean, if you're a fan of Daniel Craig's run, you've probably already seen the film. I would recommend it to people. I would recommend that, you go in with some sort of knowledge of Spectre. You know, I would watch it.
Well, you have to understand where
I would think so.
Where the Bond Swan relationship, you know, started essentially.
I would encourage people to watch Spectre, but you know, Spectre has like a certain stink on it that like some people are just like, I'm not going to watch it. So go in with some sort of knowledge of Spectre and you will get a much more of an appreciation of this movie. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy it. And it's a great send off.
Yeah, really now, enjoyed the action beats in this film too. I thought the action set pieces were really well done. Mm-hmm. Really inventive too. Like stuff like him riding like the motorcycle up the aqueduct basically, and just kind of like flying into the air, and obviously like the money shot from the trailer where the DB5 like has the machine guns and he puts it into a fucking like a donut spin to go around and kill all the bad guys. Obviously like the scene where he kills Logan Ash, felt like a major throwback, in a way that we haven't seen in a little bit, of him just like having the choice to, you know, let someone off the hook, but he's like, nah, I'm just going to fucking kick a car.
Yeah. I'm just going to drop a car on you. Like Roger Moore. I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Like that was a ton of fun. And also like everything inside of Safin's base, essentially, including that extended, like that one extended sequence that they had in the film where he was like fighting his way up the stairwell, essentially, whereas all that long, like that one shot take. Yeah. That they did, which is very, I'm a sucker for that. Like you put like a, like an extended one take shot in the film and you're going to get me, if you bought it every time.
So yeah, man. Look, I will save my any other thoughts I have for when we do our long form breakdown of the film. Do you want to talk about next James Bonds, who you would like to see, or would you like to save that for
The problem is that I don't know. I don't have anyone in my head. I think that is the right age and the right level of celebrity. And by the right level of celebrity, I mean, you know who they are, but they're not like an A-list movie star actor at this point. That's also British. So
which is important. I do have someone in mind. I don't know if you are aware of who he is, but his name is Richard. His name is Richard Madden.
Oh, like and, a fucking not Ned Stark, but the
Rob Stark.
Rob Stark from Game of Thrones. That's an interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting.
He's 35 now. Mm-hmm. By the time they do another James Bond film, we'll probably see another James Bond film in about 5 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. Give or take a couple of years, he'll be at the right age. He's been in some action stuff. He's been in a Netflix produced TV show called The Bodyguard, which essentially is, I thought it was just him auditioning to be James Bond. he's about to be in Eternals. So his cachet is about to blow up.
Right.
I think he looks the part. He's from Scotland. You know, there's been a pretty famous guy from Scotland who was James Bond at one point. Yeah, that's my choice for right now. Until I see somebody else, that's my choice for right now.
I'll have to check out The Bodyguard, because I literally haven't seen Richard Madden in anything except for Game of Thrones. So
yeah, check him out in that, and I'd be curious to see what you think. It's one of the most tense shows that I've ever seen. It's just like tense for no reason, right? Like it's like, like there's a lot of pressure here, man. And one last thing I wanted to ask to get your opinion on. So Daniel Craig's run is the first in the series to be entirely connected, so to speak, in one world, right? Like the things that happen in Casino Royale are referenced in No Time to Die. Like all of that stuff happened in this.
It is a self-contained arc, essentially.
Right. Do you, for the next James Bond, well, there's a couple things I want to ask you. For the next run of films, do you like that idea? Do you want to see a story played out over 4 to 5 films, only this time they kind of know, they have a roadmap?
Right. So that's tough, right? Because this feels like one of those bells that once you ring, it's hard to unring, because connect, allowing yourself to be connected to future films allows you to build a, you know, overarching arc that connects over the course. Like it's hard to essentially like the Bond films of yore are almost like what the Fast movies are now. And like, I know there's connective tissue between the different Fast films, but they're all kind of self-contained.
Yeah.
They're in and of themselves. And so, but and this was also very successful. Like obviously the quality of film varied from, you know, from one to the next, but you got arguably two of the top five James Bond films of all time in this five movie run. And even the ones that were not as good weren't like the bottom of the James Bond barrel in my estimation. Maybe Quantum's, you know, pretty far down there, but it's not like, you know, we're not talking like Moonraker levels of badness here. So it's hard to not go back to that, but at the same time, I could use the break. You know what I mean? I almost wish they would do a one-off like Idris Elba James Bond film that just stands alone by itself, just to give everyone a breather before they go into the next next crazy arc. But then, like, you know, you'd have to go into that being like, hey, this is the only Idris Elba one that we're doing, and then that almost becomes like a Never Say Never Again Bond film in some ways, which I don't also think would be good. So
I feel like if you're gonna do one-offs, do one-offs, right? Like I was talking with Jay about this. Like if you do Idris Elba right now is 50 years old.
Yeah.
If you do one with him, you know, there's a certain sect of the populace that look like me that they're going to be pissed if Idris Elba has one movie.
Yeah.
So do you say, all right, we're going to do this one movie and then take another break, or do you say you do this one movie and then wait the, you know, 2 to 3 years to get out another one, but then it's a different James Bond? Like it's a sticky wicket, right?
Right.
So also, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't mind one-offs, but if you're going to do a connected story, I would love for there to be some sort of roadmap.
Yeah. I think they would do that if they decided to go that route again. I don't think when they do the next arc of James Bond films, if they do decide to do a connected thing, I don't think you're gonna see new stuff. Like I don't think you're gonna draw back to Spectre. I don't think that you're going to, you know, I don't even see Bond having the same like romantic arc that he did in this franchise. I think you're going to do some different things with it, which is what I'd like to see. But yeah, it's hard to go back to just kind of doing these standalone, like exist in the time period that it's in features. Especially cause the world's a different place. Like they referenced it so many times during this Craig run that the world is so different now than it was, you know, when James Bond movies first started getting made, where you had, you know, a universal enemy in the world, essentially, that you could then like closer align with as time went on, as geopolitics got more complicated and things of that nature. So it's just an interesting and difficult, like James Bond almost has to go up against terrorists all the time
now. Yeah. It's a very like American version of how to do things, like America is now, right? Like America is always looking for some big boogeyman to some, you know, some terrorist or something. That's why 24 was so popular. But every season of 24, he's fighting some foreign terrorist. The world is a little more nuanced than that. So it's going to be difficult. The other thing that I would like to see, is, you know, this run was born from the like gritty, realistic Jason Bourne type, you know, like let's get down and dirty. Let's be hyper realistic. The next James Bond set of films, I want to see them go a little light. Now, look, I come on here every month and I talk about, you know, how Roger Moore is just silly and all that. And I'm not saying it's got to be Roger Moore silly, but I would like to see, like fun spy shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like I want to see a little more. I like the gadgets. I do. They don't have to be like ludicrous and stuff. But when they were mocking, like in the earlier films, when Q gave him a radio and that was his gadget, and he was like, that's it. And he was like, what were you expecting? An exploding pen? Like, yeah, I was kind of expecting an exploding pen. Like I want, you know, I want something like that. So I wouldn't mind them going a little light and having a little more fun. You can be serious, but have some fun.
I think that's why the first half of No Time to Die felt so welcome, because we had just spent two movies of Sam Mendes making like the heaviest James Bond films that have ever existed. And so when we got to go back to just like Bond, like running around, like gunning guys down, like, you know, having fun, like taking a shot in the middle of a fucking gunfight, like that kind of stuff. Like that was like, man. Oh, like I missed this. Like we haven't had this in a couple films. Like this is great.
Yeah, man. Get that. You know, there's nothing wrong with the male power fantasy every once in a while. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of synonymous with this franchise. And then you can hit them, you know, with the existentialism.
Well, and I don't think that if they do another arc, I don't think you'll get another like Casino Royale-esque origin story. Like I think James Bond will just be present, and like it'll just be understood that everyone knows who James Bond is now, and we're just picking up, you know, in the middle of his career, essentially. Yeah. So. Yeah.
So. Any final thoughts, Brad?
No, like I said, I like the movie quite a bit. I think I gave it 4 stars. For fans of the Craig Bond saga, out of 5 when I reviewed it on Coming Distractions. And I stand by that. Like I said, I put this firmly in the middle of the Daniel Craig arc, but closer to the top than to the bottom. Like I would say it's an above average James Bond film. In terms of, we'll save this for when we do the I'd be curious to see where we slot this into our overall rankings, which I'll have to pull out of the bin essentially from when we did it. I feel like that this movie is going to exist in the upper half of the series, but closer to like the mid. Like I feel like it'll exist in the same spot in the series as a whole, like in the above average, like maybe not top 10, but right outside of the top 10 films.
Yeah, I'll have to, we'll have to see what our rankings were before. And then I'm going to have to watch a few more of them over again.
Darn. Twist your arm.
Right. Don't threaten me with a good time. But we'll save all that for our long form breakdown. And thank you for listening. And the Men with the Golden Tongues will return.